and welcome to the Partners in FinCrime podcast in association with FSCom. My name's Evan McGugan.
And I'm Chris Vaughan.
In this podcast series, we'll be looking to discuss all things anti-financial crime.
We'll be deep diving into cutting-edge stories, as well as other interesting topics in the financial crime space.
In this episode, we talk about Binance and its recent agreement to pay over $4 billion to resolve a recent US Department of Justice investigation. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Hey, Evan. Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Not too bad at all. How's life?
Very well, very well. Yeah, not much to talk about, I don't think, although I know you've just been away. Give us the breakdown. Where have you been? What have you been doing?
Yeah. Just back from Thailand. So I guess at the point of recording, I got back from my travels 3 or 4 days ago. So still trying to push off the jet lag, but I seem to be returning to normal life now. But yeah, no, two weeks in Thailand, bit of a winter warmer. Incredible. Actually started off in Bangkok. Made our way up to Chiang Mai and then down to like Ao Nang and Koh Phi Phi, so like the islands. So got a pretty great mixture of like city stuff, culture, history, white sand beaches, clear ocean, incredible food. But with that being said, you get the benefit of a winter warmer, but then when you come back, it's bloody freezing.
Yeah, it's all the worse because you've been away. Yeah, fair enough. We're living quite different lives, I think, me and you, mate. For those who don't know, I've got a 16, 17-month old little girl, and so the idea of going away on a beach holiday like that is dreamy. There you go.
With that being said, though, I assume you must be looking forward to probably the first Christmas that she'll be able to enjoy properly.
Yeah, I mean, she's had one Christmas, but yeah, that was she was a tiny baby then, so yeah, it'll be nice to have a bit more of a awareness and understanding maybe of what's going on this time around.
So what are we talking about today, Chris? I think there may just be one story in town.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably been quite a bit going on since we last spoke. It's been a bit of a break since last time, largely due to you being away, I suppose, but The big news that's just recently come out in the last couple of days really has been this story around Binance. So I think that's the main one, and probably we can spend a bit of time going through the key pieces there and talking about, I suppose, maybe the background, what led up to this, and then also the historic nature of the penalties that have been imposed here and why it's happened, maybe even this sort of trend. So I think the Binance piece is a perfectly good one to get into, and it's quite hot off the press, so it'll be good to react to it. Even if we don't know everything yet, it's still it's been a while in the making, this one. So I think, you know, do you want to start with that maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good point to make too. I think LinkedIn's obviously been ablaze over the past day or two on this, and I think we've all watched the US DOJ's statements and also the press releases too. I think we haven't necessarily got anything that comes close to like an FCA final notice yet, but I think we can sort of read into the guts of what the DOJ is saying. I'd seen and I'd actually scribbled down here a range of pretty spectacular sound bites from the DOJ and some of the related attorneys and whatnot connected to this case. So maybe we could start off with some of these quotes because they're pretty stonking, astonishing stuff. And then maybe we could jump into the case itself.
Absolutely, go for it.
Good. So start off with Merrick Garland first off. So the current U.S. Attorney General. I think some people will remember him too as who was to be a Supreme Court Justice before I think Trump blocked him. I think he was Obama's original last nominee, but his main quote when he was kicking off the press conference was, quote unquote, "The message here should be clear. Using new technology to break the law does not make you a disruptor. It makes you a criminal." Janet Yellen then as well, you might remember her from the Federal Reserve, I think, quote unquote, "Binance turned a blind eye to its legal obligations in the pursuit of profit." Its willful failures allowed money to flow to terrorists, cyber criminals, and child abusers through its platform, which again is pretty strong. There's a few more quotes there too. I'll not go into all of them, but the likes of Lisa Monaco, she's a deputy attorney general, talks about corporate strategy, putting profits over compliance, not being a path to riches. It's a path to federal prosecution. And then so too, some quotes around Binance founder CZ choosing growth and personal wealth over following financial regulations aimed at stopping the laundering of criminal cash. And finally, Jim Lee of the IRS, when you put growth above compliance, you end up in hot water. So clearly, and probably quite rightly, the US authorities feel like they've caught quite a big fish here. Where do we begin? Do you maybe want to set out what exactly Binance has found itself falling into here?
Yeah, certainly can do. I think it obviously they have caught a big fish. I mean, they're right there. They definitely have. I think maybe to contextualize the story, I think I've seen a couple of things lying around on LinkedIn that might be that sort of seem to suggest that this is a big problem, but is, you know, maybe it has been exaggerated a little bit, or is unfair in terms of the nature of the actual business and what was going on with Binance. But to contextualize, like, for people who haven't really looked into the story much or maybe don't know some of the history, this investigation has been ongoing for at least a year in length, but really looks at the history of Binance since it was actually first set up. So I think it was first set up in 2017, but didn't actually require any CDD on its customers at all, because it was sort of born out of, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, but it was born out of the cryptocurrency sort of ideals of not having KYC and not having to, you know, to go through these centralized sort of processes of identification, verification in order to be able to access financial services. And because of that, Binance followed that message, that ideal, through you know, the first few years of its inception, really. So it went from 2017 to 2021 before even mandating KYC, and then still allowed some customers to continue to not verify, to not undergo KYC procedures until only sort of early last year, which is extremely, you know, that's a long period of time to go without really putting in place a solid KYC AML program. And you can imagine by the time it even got to the size that it was by then, it's much more difficult to introduce these kinds of new stringent processes into a behemoth than it is into a tiny little fish, you know, and just for the size of the company, the nature of the change that would have been needed by the time it got so big was massive. So it's no surprise that you can't build, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. You can't build a really good AML program only in a couple of years once you've decided you're actually going to start KYCing people. And by then, anyway, so many bad actors were able to obviously onboard without undergoing any KYC. So that, I think that's the history. And this isn't just a story of, you know, they've not been doing things well since they introduced KYC. It's actually the whole shebang. It's since they first set up and they decided not to pursue KYC for customers. And I think they were sort of seen as heroic in cryptocurrency circles in a lot of ways because of not, you know, because they were so adamant about this approach. But there's really only so long you can carry on. And this is really, I suppose, the comeuppance that compliance professionals sort of expected, I guess. But that's a bit of background to it. And that's why they've fallen afoul.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess what has happened over the past few days then is Binance.com, or at least Binance Holdings Limited, I think, which is the entity that runs the exchange, has ultimately pled guilty and agreed to pay over $4 billion to resolve the DOJ's long run investigation, really, into those violations that you've mentioned, violations of the BSA, it would be in the US, so the Bank Secrecy Act, and accompanying sort of obligations to put in an effective compliance program, such as KYCing or not, as the case may be, users as an MSB, as a money transmitting business in the US, failure to register properly as one of those. And yeah, to your point, it's one of the main things that the judgment seems to pull out is that absolutely wild. I was going to say allegation, but I guess if they've agreed a settlement, it's not so much an allegation anymore, but just allowing people just to open up accounts and trade without maybe submitting any information beyond an email address, which is absolutely bonkers looking back at it. And I saw a mention too of the fact, what was the date you said it was there? Was it August 2021 that they started KYCing customers?
I think that was when they announced that they would have to, okay. But I think they didn't implement and mandate the KYC until, for those who hadn't verified already, until last year, I believe, earlier on in the year.
Fair. So I saw a mention in that press release too then. So on that date that they began to require all users to provide KYC information, they then allowed a lot of those clients who had already come on to potentially trade up until maybe like May or something of the next year without having to provide that KYC before, I guess, they were suspended. So I saw a mention of between incorporation in 2017 and then at some point in October 2022, US users, and this is, I guess, this is where it all comes into, like Binance, thinking back to some of those quotes that the US authorities were saying at the start, prioritizing growth over profit. And a lot of that was through its US customer base, which is why the US is so heavily involved here. But US users across that time conducted trillions of dollars of transactions on the platform, created significant profit for Binance, and they just didn't have an effective AML program in whatsoever at that point in time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the exact point. Just to revisit that penalty agreement, it's billion with a B, which is one of the largest financial penalties of all time. But it is split, just we should speak to that as well. So there's a criminal fine of around 1.8 billion, and they've agreed to forfeit 2.5 billion. But there's also agreements with other US authorities. So FinCEN, OFAC is one of them for sanction breaches as well, and CFTC. And I think that's close to 2 billion as well. The total package altogether is just over 4 billion that they're having to pay. And I actually think that CZ, the CEO, as he's known, is having to pay, I think, 50 million, I read. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong there, but I believe he's also having to pay himself a financial penalty of 50 million for sort of overseeing this. And he's also agreed to step down. Mm-hmm. And has appointed a new CEO. It's a big story, this one.
Yeah, it's easy to look at a large number like that and not really consider the gravity of it. But I'm sure we've all either created those AML training slide deck or seen them where you have your case studies of HSBC, for example, when they fell foul of sanctions or they were conducting or facilitating money laundering on behalf of the Sinaloa cartel. They were fined 1.8. So this is significantly larger, which sort of, yeah, puts paid to the significance, I guess, of this. And yeah, to your point as well, it's not just BSA, it's not just BSA AML compliance, but sanctions sort of comes into it too. And from my reading, well, if we're talking about Binance and Binance's US operations, naturally we're talking about US persons. US persons have to comply with US sanctions. And I saw a mention of between 2018 and 2022 that Binance had willfully caused nearly $1 billion in trades between US users and users resident in Iran. Now, I guess Binance is a global VASP with local entities. They may have chosen in some regard to not comply with US sanctions. They had users in Iran, for example. They had users in jurisdictions that maybe a UK or US compliance department would see outside of risk appetite. But Binance's failure to put in some type of control to stop their US users from matching trades with users in other jurisdictions basically caused significant sanctions violations under US law. So it really is a double whammy in that regard, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose this is another interesting bit where rubber meets the road with crypto, because crypto itself, I sort of think, just as an ecosystem as an idea, wants to be borderless. It wants to not belong to a jurisdiction. It wants to be, you know, the native currency of the internet, or internet money, as people call it. And that is inherently, you know, jurisdictionless, I suppose. And I think that you still have to have these problems, and this comes all part of parcel of not employing a KYC program, not having an AML program, is whereas the funds or the network itself might not be inherently jurisdictional or territory based, the people using it and the groups who may be using it do, and we do need to be aware of the risks involved there. So I think that's, even to this day, even in, you know, in cryptocurrency firms that have got mature AML programs that have been doing all the right things from day one, that, you know, that have blockchain monitoring and all these kinds of things, this jurisdictional issue is still a problem. It's still an issue for the travel rule. It's still an issue for blockchain monitoring. It's still causing sort of problems when, yes, you've got KYC for your users, but what about unhosted wallets? There's no jurisdictional information there. There's no way to determine, you know, where the people who have control of this wallet are based. And that, again, it's an issue. I think in this case, it was purely because Binance didn't do KYC. So they didn't know where their customers were based, which is obviously, that's a problem. You know, that is a problem. I'm not trying to wave that away. I just want to point out the larger issue, which I think is that, you know, inherently there is a jurisdictional, it's like trying to put, you know, a square peg in a round hole, so to speak. It just, it doesn't really apply. And so trying to pin it down can be quite difficult. But anyway, yeah, the sanctions breaches here are important to mention, I think, and like I say, it's really not just a rap on the knuckles. I was going to say that's but slightly more severe than a rap on the knuckles, but it's historic failings rather than current ones. You know, it's what they were doing prior to last year and prior to 2021 that's the real issue here, I think.
Agreed, and it seems to be as well. And I know some people have been talking about this on LinkedIn, but like 4 billion, large amount of money. I think Binance have quite significant revenue year on year. You mentioned CZ's fine of 50 million. I'm not sure what his net worth is, but I'm sure it ranks in the billions too. Whilst I guess the US is quite happy to have settled this case, and they'll be very happy with the message that this is sending out to the industry, which I guess is the most important thing. It also sort of illustrates the fact that, yeah, to your point, it's historical failings. They should be rightly punished and, you know, remediate whatever they have to out of that and take the learnings. But also, you know, Binance will continue from here. And it's not so much like punitive, but I hesitate to use the word like too big to fail or whatever, but like Binance will sort of continue on from this. And yeah, it's pocket change.
Yeah, I suppose that question's still open though, to be honest. The problem, I want to point out two things. So first of all, I want to point out that this isn't FTX. And I'll say why, and I'll say more on that in a second. But I think the second point is that then the reason that we don't know whether this is, it's also to do with what will customers' reactions to this be? And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I've read that I think it's in the panic sort of withdrawals from Binance is in the hundreds of millions now in terms of funds managed. So there's obviously going to be a lot of Binance customers whose assets, you know, they've got exposure to this, and they're going to want to potentially pull their assets out of Binance, either to go to another VASP, another provider, or into their own custody. And that's understandable when something like this happens. That's what we saw with FTX. The real doom of FTX was not just the sort of the criminal side, but also all customers just fled, obviously fled the system trying to get their funds out of this. The problem there was that there were no funds to be pulled out because they'd already been misused or misappropriated or embezzled. That's the issue, I think. And that's the difference with Binance, is that what they're not accused of is misappropriation of customer funds. So they were audited for the amount of assets that they hold under management. And again, I don't have the numbers, but if my memory serves me, it was something, it was around 60 to 70 billion, I think, under asset management at Binance. So that's the amount that they held in reserve that they were keeping safe, essentially. They were sort of safeguarding. And I'll just read what I do have in front of me, which is what CZ, never know what we should say, probably CZ, what he said about it. And he said, "I'm proud to point out that in our resolutions with the US agencies, they, one, do not allege that Binance misappropriated any user funds, and two, do not allege that Binance engaged in any market manipulation." So that's why I'm saying, I'm not saying it's good, but I am saying that it's different to FTX in that it's a pure fine for lack of AML measures and failure to sort of implement proper procedures, rather than this is a scam, they were using, you know, people's funds to ill effect, as they were in the FTX case. But like I said, the reason that it's not, we don't know if Binance will be able to continue, is A, the size of the fine, and then B, I suppose, will customers just pull all their funds out of Binance in a panic, which may mean that they don't have a business to continue. But you're right, there's nothing to really stop them continuing, and they've sort of made arrangements to continue, it sounds like, with the authorities as well. So you would think it would just be not plain sailing, but it would be from here they should be allowed to continue, I think.
Yeah, definitely choppy waters ahead rather than yeah, plain sailing. I saw a mention in the disclosure that they would have to have like an independent sort of compliance monitor appointed for,
that's right,
for
a few years
well,
right? So yeah, that's it.
I guess that will help them towards, you know, hopefully the resolution of any items that remain outstanding. And yeah, that CZ line is quite interesting too, because yeah, it very much, to your point, seems to be distancing Binance from the FTX case, trying to reassure clients and the market against the crypto equivalent of a bank run on Binance. And I guess the real illustration of the difference between the two cases is SBF facing 110 years in prison and CZ just has to step down. I think there was some mention of him maybe facing 18 months in prison, but I think that might be deferred or suspended, so he may get away from having to serve that.
Yeah, it obviously is completely different. Still, 50 million is nothing to sniff at, which I think is also what he's personally been fined. But you're right, in the grand scale of things, and if reports of his net worth are anything close to realistic, then it's pretty much a drop in the ocean. But yeah, interesting case. Is there anything sort of from an AML perspective we can pull out of this, do you think? I mean, other than the obvious, you need to have an AML framework in place, and it's, you know, it's really important now. I was thinking maybe more along the lines of this whole offshore approach. We could maybe talk about a little bit. So setting up an offshore company that deals in crypto assets, for example, but then still serves the customers onshore, you know, it's sort of offshore, but not offshore, because it's still serving the customers from the jurisdiction. So in this case, it was an offshore entity that was providing crypto asset services to US customers, right? And there's something interesting about this. It's very common in the crypto world where you've got one entity, but it's that's providing services, but it's providing it from a different jurisdiction than the services are being offered in. So I didn't know if you had any sort of thoughts there, really.
Yeah, I'm not really too sure, to be honest. Yeah, I know I was certainly reading mention of, so I guess when Binance was first coming up, they focused on the US to get that high growth. The US, I guess they did register with FinCEN, although I note that they didn't file a single SAR with FinCEN, but they registered, and then they were asked to leave, and I guess they then set up this offshore Binance.us. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was. I think 2021 they set up this other entity that was intended just to service US clients, right? But it sounds like they did continue to service high net worth individuals via the old entity, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah, I think there was some mention of the US high net worth individuals, VIPs, being significant liquidity providers. I mean, I guess from a lessons learned perspective, I think it is difficult. Like, there's so many instances or examples in this of just things that you shouldn't do, but then they're so obvious that I feel like we probably shouldn't waste our time talking about them in any great detail, but mention of, you know, going off book with these VIPs to these offshore entities, but then keeping certain VIPs in there, speaking to them, asking them to provide false information or documentation to make it seem like they're not ordinarily resident in US, and so on and so forth.
I think you're right. I think it's a complicated case, and I think this offshoring thing, it's just, I think it really is. It's not in the spirit of you know, of I suppose AML programs and legislation in general, having this process whereby you try to get around the fact that you're supposed to register with local authorities by just registering one that's offshore and then providing those services back to those same customers isn't really gonna work, I don't think. I think, you know, again, it's one of these short-term fixes that in the long term is just going to prove to be completely outside of the scope of what regulators want, and we'll just run into a brick wall eventually. You'll run into financial penalties, you'll run into regulator trouble. So I think it's been something that the crypto industry has been doing for a while, but I think it's gonna hopefully start to turn now, and firms are gonna have to realize that we're gonna have to go about things in the right ways, get the correct registrations, get the correct authorizations, whatever that may be in future, with the local entities wherever they may be, and do things the right way from the start instead of this sort of reverse engineered approach that we've been getting, where it's offshore but not offshore but still servicing customers in the jurisdiction in which it's far too complicated, and it isn't going to look good for any regulator, particularly if you're marketing different types of financial services to the citizens of a particular jurisdiction where that regulator is supposed to have oversight. That kind of reminds me of this crypto assets FinProm thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole financial promotion stuff within the UK applies to also EU based, and anyone who's marketing crypto asset products to UK customers. And that's really how it should be, because otherwise it's almost like you're getting around the FCA by just being registered somewhere else. And so I think it's important that we do make sure that where we've got, just for conduct reasons more than anything else, where we've got these jurisdictions providing these services, they need to be locally registered. And I just think it's going to be inevitable from now on that's the way that things are going to go. And if you haven't got there, you'll basically be forced to go there now and get the right registrations.
Yeah, agreed. It bodes well. It bodes well for the future. I think it's clear that the authorities, and this has been the case for a bit, that, you know, crypto isn't the outsider that it was 6 or 7 years ago. All VASPs then should sort of be alert to that. But I think we're hopefully, well, I don't know if crypto is necessarily mainstream just yet, but we're maybe squeaking towards mainstream, and there's always going to be these instances of enforcement action, fines, challenge. It's all a necessary sort of precursor to that, as it sort of grows out of its nascent challenger phase. But yeah, I mean, if firms can focus on doing the right thing, getting the right registrations, building the best frameworks, I think you and I both sort of know that obviously crypto has its challenges, but when done correctly, it can easily reach or even exceed TradFi's ability to manage and mitigate fin crime risk in certain ways. So again, choppy waters ahead, but if you believe in crypto, hopefully this is one of those bumps in the road towards the wider industry sort of growing up out of its nascent like challenger phase almost.
Yeah. And I think maybe even some evidence of that is the effect that we've seen in the markets. You know, probably, you know, back in sort of early crypto days, even just a few years ago, really, I think something like this, you would have seen the markets crashing like left, right and center. But and when I say the markets, I mean the prices of the coins themselves. So I think Bitcoin's experienced a bit of a tiny little drop, but has been recovering very strongly across the board. That even the BNB token did have a crash. So Binance's own crypto asset did have a bit of a crash, but it dropped from, you know, sort of mid 200s range to low 200s. It's not the death knell for any of these assets, and it's interesting to see that's, you know, we've sort of managed to weather this is probably isn't the end of the storm, but you know, the market's not being massively affected by this is probably quite a good sign. But I think you're right, it's not the end. I think that there's many other big crypto asset firms that have behaved similarly, or perhaps are still not doing the right things that might well be, you know, the crosshairs might fall on them in future as well. So I don't think it's the last one, and it's really perhaps more of a sign of things to come than anything else. And what the SEC is looking at and focusing on as well.
Yeah, agreed. I saw, I think, just a few days ago, the SEC charging Kraken for operating as an unregistered securities exchange, broker dealer, and so on. So echoed, more to come.
Yeah, exactly. There's a slew of these coming now. So I think these are the last few. You know, they've been coming out steadily. Obviously, there's the one with Coinbase as well, and yeah, there'll be more to come, I think. But I suppose, like we say, it's really just growing pains of an industry that started without any desire for KYC and is having to learn the hard way that's how things are going to have to go if we want to become a veritable and proper industry in financial services, I suppose.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool. All right, then. I think that just about covers everything that I had to talk about on Binance, to be honest. It's definitely not the end of the story. Obviously, we're reacting to it in the early days, so there might be more stuff to come out, whether it's more penalties, whether it's sort of jail time or anything like that. We don't know yet, but perhaps we can talk about it as it emerges. Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
No, I think that's the guts of it for me. As you say, yeah, this is sort of the beginning. Well, this is the end of the beginning, but the beginning of the middle bit of this story. So maybe if more comes out over the next wee bit, I'm sure we'll be taking a look at the detail.
Cool. All right, then. Let's maybe call it a day for this one then, and we can pick up some more news next time. Sorry to do a bit of a crypto heavy one this time, guys. But we'll be back soon with some more financial crime news, I think. So been good chatting to you as ever, Evan, and speak to you soon, mate.
Likewise. See you in a bit.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Partners in FinCrime podcast. If you want to get in touch with the podcast or for more information on governance, risk and compliance related matters, please reach out on our website at fscom.co or alternatively, send us an email at partnersinfincrime@fscom.co. That's partnersinfincrime@fscom.co.